Chapter 2. Halfway between West Egg and New York, the road runs alongside the railroad and moves away from a deserted area. This place is called the Valley of Ashes. It is a strange land where ashes form hills and gardens. Sometimes gray cars drive slowly here, making creaky noises. Ash-gray men with shovels come and raise clouds of ash, hiding their work. Above this gray land, you can see the eyes of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg. The eyes are blue, huge, and wear large yellow glasses. They are painted on a big billboard, left there by an eye doctor. The doctor probably forgot about them, but they still watch over the sad land. The Valley of Ashes is near a dirty river. When the bridge is up, trains stop, and people can see this gloomy place. Once, while waiting, I met Tom Buchanan's mistress. Everyone knew Tom had a girlfriend. His friends didn't like that he took her to restaurants. I was curious but didn't want to meet her. One day, I went to New York with Tom, and when the train stopped, he pulled me out saying, "We're getting off. I want you to meet my girl." Tom had been drinking at lunch, and he was very determined. We walked under Dr. Eckelberg's watching eyes and reached a yellow brick building. It stood alone with small shops and a garage. Inside the garage was an old dusty car. A man named George Wilson owned the garage. He was pale and tired. Tom spoke to him about a car. "Hello, Wilson," Tom said, patting him on the shoulder. "How's business?" "I can't complain," Wilson replied in a weak voice. While they talked, a woman came down the stairs. She was in her mid-30s, a bit overweight but confident. She greeted Tom and asked her husband to bring some chairs. Then Tom whispered to her, "I want to see you. Get on the next train." She nodded, and we waited for her nearby. Tom said, "Terrible place, isn't it?" "Awful," I agreed. Tom added that she needed to escape sometimes, but her husband thought she visited her sister in New York. So Tom Buchanan, his girl, and I went to New York. Mrs. Wilson, Tom's girl, sat in another train car. Tom wanted to keep things discreet. In New York, Mrs. Wilson changed her dress to a tight brown one. She bought a magazine and some perfume. At the station, she chose a lavender taxi and we drove into the sunshine. Suddenly, she asked the driver to stop. "I want to get a dog," she said. "It's nice to have a dog." We stopped by an old man selling puppies from a basket. The man looked like John D. Rockefeller. Mrs. Wilson looked at the puppies and asked, "What kind are they?" "They're all kinds," the man answered. "I want a police dog," Mrs. Wilson said hopefully. The man took out a puppy. "It's not a police dog," Tom said. "It's an Airedale," the man corrected. "Strong and healthy. This one won't get cold easily," Mrs. Wilson smiled, liking the puppy. "How much?" she asked. $10, the man said. The puppy, with white feet and a fluffy brown coat, settled in Mrs. Wilson's lap. "Is it a boy or a girl?" she asked. "It's a boy," the man said. "No, it's a girl," Tom said, handing him the money. "Here's $10. We drove to Fifth Avenue. The city was warm, peaceful, almost like a countryside. I told Tom I would leave, but he insisted. "Myrtle wants you to come to the apartment." "Please come," Myrtle urged. "I'll call my sister, Catherine." Finally, we went to a building on 158th Street. Mrs. Wilson, carrying her puppy, went inside. "I'll invite the McKees and call my sister," she announced. The apartment was small, but filled with large furniture. It was crowded. There was a big photo of an old lady on the wall. Copies of Town Tattle and other magazines were on the table. Mrs. Wilson was busy with her new dog, sending the elevator boy for a box, some straw, milk, and dog biscuits. Meanwhile, Tom brought out a bottle of whiskey. I don't often drink, but that day I did. The room was bright with sunshine till 8 o'clock. Mrs. Wilson, sitting on Tom's lap, telephoned people. We ran out of cigarettes, so I went to get some. When I returned, everyone was gone, so I sat and read a book in the living room. The whiskey made reading difficult. Tom and Myrtle came back, and soon visitors arrived. Catherine, Myrtle's sister, was a slim woman with red hair and lots of bracelets. She was lively, and laughed when I asked if she lived there. She stayed at a hotel with a friend. Mr. McKee, a man from the apartment below, also visited. Mr. McKee was a polite man with a bit of shaving cream still on his face. He was a photographer and had taken the photograph of Mrs. Wilson's mother on the wall. His wife was loud and proud. She bragged that Mr. McKee had taken her picture many times. Mrs. Wilson had changed into a fancy cream-colored dress. Her new look made her act important. Her laughter and gestures were big and dramatic, and she seemed to fill the room completely. "My dear," she shouted to her sister, "these people are all about money. I had a woman visit me to look at my feet, and when she gave me the bill, you'd think she did surgery." Mrs. McKee commented, "I like your dress. It's adorable." But Mrs. Wilson looked unimpressed. "It's just an old thing I wear when I don't care how I look." "It looks wonderful on you," Mrs. McKee insisted. "Maybe Chester could take a photo of you in it." We all looked at Mrs. Wilson, who smiled brightly. Mr. McKee studied her and said he needed different light to photograph her properly. Tom yawned and suggested, "Have a drink, everyone. Myrtle, get more ice and water before we fall asleep." Myrtle complained about lazy people and then fussed over the puppy. She went to the kitchen, pretending to be very busy. Mr. McKee talked about his photos from Long Island, but Tom wasn't interested. Mr. McKee's wife pointed at Catherine, Mrs. Wilson's sister, and suggested she could be a good subject for photos. Two, Catherine sat beside me and asked, "Do you live on Long Island?" "I live in West Egg," I said. "I was at a party at Gatsby's," she said. "Do you know him?" "I live next door to him. They say he's related to Kaiser Wilhelm, and that's why he has so much money." "Really?" I asked. "Yes. I'm afraid of him," Catherine said. "I wouldn't want him to have anything on me." Mrs. Wilson's voice cut in, "Why don't they get a divorce if they can't stand each other?" Catherine nodded in agreement. "Doesn't she like Wilson either?" I asked. Myrtle overheard and answered angrily, with bad language. "See," Catherine said quietly, "it's his wife who keeps them apart. She's Catholic. They don't believe in divorce." I knew Daisy wasn't Catholic, and the lie surprised me. "When they marry," Catherine whispered, "they'll move west until things calm down." "It'd be better to go to Europe," I suggested. "Do you like Europe?" she asked, surprised. "I just returned from Montes Carlo." "Really?" I asked. "Yes, just last year," Catherine replied. "I went to Monte Carlo with a friend. We had $1,200 when we left, but lost it all in 2 days. It was difficult to get back. I hated that place." The afternoon sky outside the window was a beautiful blue, like the Mediterranean Sea. Then Mrs. McKee called me back to the room. "I almost made a mistake," she said, loudly. "I nearly married a man who wasn't good enough for me. Everyone said, 'Lucille, that man is below you.' But Chester saved me." "Yes, but you didn't marry him," Myrtle said, nodding. "I know I didn't," Mrs. McKee agreed. "I married him," Myrtle said, "and that's the difference." "Why did you marry him, Myrtle?" asked Catherine. "No one forced you," Myrtle thought for a moment. "I married him because I thought he was a gentleman. I thought he had good manners, but he wasn't even fit to clean my shoes." "You liked him for a time," Catherine said. "I never liked him," Myrtle said, loudly. "The only crazy thing I did was marry him. He borrowed a suit for our wedding and never told me. When the owner came to get it, I cried all afternoon." "She should leave him," Catherine whispered to me. "They've lived over that garage for 11 years. Tom is her first romance." The second bottle of whiskey was being passed around, except Catherine, who said she felt fine without it. Tom ordered sandwiches for everyone, which were very filling. I wanted to leave and walk in the park, but arguments kept pulling me back to my seat. The city lights began to shine outside. Myrtle moved her chair closer to me and shared the story of meeting Tom. "We were on the train," she said. "I was going to see my sister. Tom wore a nice suit, and I couldn't stop looking at him. When we got to the station, he was next to me, and I told him I'd call a policeman, but he knew I was lying. I was so excited. I felt like I was dreaming. I kept thinking, 'You can't live forever.'" She turned to Mrs. McKee and laughed. "I'll give you this dress soon. I need a new one. I have a lot to buy. a massage, a collar for the dog, and a wreath for my mother's grave. It was 9 o'clock, and suddenly it was 10. Mr. McKee slept with his hands in his lap. I wiped the dry shaving cream off his face. The little dog sat on the table, looking around. People came and went, making plans. Nearer, midnight, Tom and Mrs. Wilson argued about her mentioning Daisy's name. "Daisy! Daisy!" Mrs. Wilson shouted. "I'll say what I want. Daisy!" Tom moved quickly and hit her, breaking her nose. Blood covered the bathroom floor, women yelling, and Mrs. Wilson crying out in pain. Mr. McKee shook himself awake, looked around, and then left. "Come for lunch someday," he said to me in the elevator. "Sure," I replied. We rode down in silence. Later, I stood at the train station waiting for the 4 a.m. train, half asleep and reading the newspaper.